Hello and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, we're going into an area that we love today, the area of spirits. And, well, not of the ghostly sort, but of the drinkable sort.
Yeah, we have a chap that's fusing different sort of ideas from around the world. He's Nish Sharma, and he lives up in the sort of Edinburgh area, but obviously he's Indian, and he's fusing different things. So Nish, welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you, Graham. Thank you, Kevin. For people watching this, my name is Nishant Sharma. I'm commonly known as Nish, and I have been living in Edinburgh for over 20 years. That's where my home is.
Yeah, and the accents come with it as well, by the look of it.
You've got to love a Scottish accent, haven't you, Graham?
I try not to have, because I have a hybrid accent rather than a traditional Scottish accent. I was born in India. Yeah. I lived there for a good 12, 13 years of my life. And post-finishing my hires, I have been living in Scotland. So I've outlived my life in India, in Scotland. So I try to, you know, keep it neutral.
I think it's lovely. I really do. I honestly think it. And actually, a hybrid accent is, in a sense, like it's what you're doing in your business, isn't it? You're actually creating. I don't know whether you would call it a hybrid or a fusion. I mean, you take. Well, you explain. You have a business called Rutland Square Spirits. What's that all about?
So it's a hybrid in terms of our narrative and story, because it bridges a gap between India and Scotland. It's an immigrant story. I belong to nowhere and somewhere. So I left India so many years ago, and I came to Scotland in search of a better life. And then ever since, Scotland is home, but a fragment of my life keeps me connected to India, which is family, friends, and so on and so on. Yeah. So people like myself who don't belong anywhere, but, you know, are part of this globe that we call home, which we are never leaving in our existence. So I am trying to knit a story that not only takes me back to my memory lane, which is India, but also pays homage to my home, which is Edinburgh.
Got you. But so Rutland Square, then, it makes, is it predominantly gin?
Rutland Square started as a gin, because we didn't have the resource to do anything else, and which transpired into a spirits and alcobev enterprise, which now has a gin, a rum, and a whiskey, which is will be added to the portfolio this year.
Wow. Okay. Oh, is it a blend or is it single?
So we will start with a blended spirit, because we are experimenting, staying true to the nature of what we do, which is a bridge between East and West. And as we all know, that you cannot blend whiskies with flavors. So it has to be driven through the scientific approach of creating whiskey. So we'll start with a blend, and we will go into single malts, is where my passion and my flavor palette is.
Yeah, mine's Dalmore, but yeah, well, who doesn't? But what I'm really interested in, as with an Indian colleague, we're interested in, well, first of all, which part of India do you hail from?
So a bit of everywhere, because my family hails from a place called Amritsar in Punjab, where the Golden Temple is. Yeah. But my great-grandfather had an itchy foot, and he didn't want it to, you know, work with his within the family business of farming and flour mill and being a landlord. And he could speak English back in the early 30s. Mm-hmm. So he migrated to the extreme part of India, which is northeast, which is Assam, which is globally known as the tea capital of the world, which hails from India. And I was born in a small town called Dibrugarh. This is why I use the word hybrid a lot, because I do not belong to one part of India. I belong to two parts, one where my family comes from and my origin story is, and one is where my life started, which is Dibrugarh, a very small town in the northeast, close to the China border.
So my imagination straight away, Nish, said that if you're starting with gin and you're looking for this Indian mix, it would be spices you'd be putting in. But now hearing Assam, are you thinking tea as well as a set of
So we are the world's first and only oolong white tea infused chai spiced Scottish gin and rum. So again, to connect the dots, I wanted to pick up the tea from the place I was born and the spices from where the family belongs to, and Scottish spirit, because we live in the Mecca of spirits. Scotland is known for its spirits. So we distill our spirits in Scotland in Edinburgh. We use some of the spices from the far west part of India, and the tea comes from the northeast where I was born, and botanicals from Scotland.
Fantastic.
Well, I mean, I,
Got to
you
try
know,
some of this, Graham.
well,
I
yeah, this
love
is the
small
difficulty.
batch gin.
This is the difficulty, because we've had other people on over the years, Nish, who've talked about, well, the purest form of, what was it, Kevin?
Oh, vodka, pure
Vodka,
vodka.
vodka, yeah, and you can almost get your head around it. How would you describe the taste that this gin infused chai is? What is it? What does it taste like?
If I put it to give some base to what we do, gin is predominantly a neutral grain spirit infused with juniper, done in a London dry method, which is in a copper pot still. So slow distillation goes through the natural distillation process every spirit goes through. And when the infusion happens, so infusion can be misleading. You can infuse with flavors, or you can infuse in a London dry method, which is botanical, straight into the copper pot still, which creates the steam. So we use the London dry method, which is we bring in all the botanicals, and we throw it in with the lovely juniper we locally source, and we let it set. And once the infusion happens, the heat, the pressure, the flavors marry with the alcohol, and then they are vapor captured and slowly mixed with the local water, and a water which is distilled, and so it doesn't have any artificial coloring or flavoring. We just kind of use tap water. It's called RO water, and it's the purest form of water. And we bring it down to 41% as in consumer strength, and we bottle it and we bring it to the world. So in terms of flavors, it's a very complex gin, because the approach we have taken is the whiskey approach. Lots of layers. So you instinctively get the juniper on your nose, because otherwise it won't be gin if there is no juniper. And followed by nice floral notes of the oolong tea, which is very, very strong on the nose. And then subtleness of the cardamom, cinnamon, star anise, Lucrus, and followed by some bitter, then some dryness. And there's a lot going on. So I am a whiskey drinker by default. So when I was creating the spirit, it had to have something that I can sip. So it need to have those complexities, so I don't have to mix it with either tonic water or whatever. So unless the spirit doesn't have a character, which is complexities you can flavor and you can play with in your palate, you're just drinking it to get drunk. So this gin, I will define it as a fusion of culture and Scotland, mixed in a bottle with a lot of love.
Gosh, fantastic. Now, I must admit, Nish, I'm by default a gin drinker rather than a whiskey drinker. I
Music to my
mean to say,
ears.
I don't mind a nice whiskey, quite enjoy one. But I have very rarely ever found a gin that you could drink neat without
Always you
tonic. So
can.
I'm really, really tempted to try this out.
We'll get you a bottle.
Last time we had somebody from whiskey. Do you know what? I'm a whiskey drinker, he says. So, and then he gets a bottle of that. So it's just one of those. You're just tarting yourself around, Kevin.
Actually, Graham, just listening to Nish speak, it reminds me of a weekend away that we had 2 or 3 years ago. Just down the road from you, actually, Nish,
Yeah,
Peebles
people there.
Hydro, have got their own gin distillery built into the
Beef
entire.
Hydro. Yeah, I know them very well. Very good. They're doing an amazing job
We went
there.
for the gin making experience. So it's fantastic. You go into this big room that's it's got all the feel of a school chemistry lab. Little stills up and down the work areas, and then the chemical cupboards all around the room with every form of aromatic in them that you could imagine. And literally, you can make the gin of your choice.
Yeah.
And but of course, it's when you're there as just a member of the public, it's largely the blind leading the blind.
The, yeah. The thing that's intriguing me, Nish, is that the first time that you threw all these ingredients in, what was your expectation?
It wasn't as simple as how you are describing it. It took me almost 3 to 4 years to create the recipe. So I'll take you back in a little time warp so you can get some context. So I migrated to Scotland in early 2007. I have started my journey as a dishwasher and a waiter, and I scaled myself up to banking. And I spent a good amount of my youth working for various banks such as BlackRock, Citibank, etc., etc. And excuse me, time comes to a stop because my grandmother passes away, and grief actually led to what I'm doing today. I was very close to my grandmother, and this is first time in my existence I experienced cremation. I was born a Hindu, but I follow more spirituality, so I don't follow any religion as such. And when I was exposed to the drama and the theater of life after death, which in my existence, and I saw, and I almost felt, what am I doing on this planet? If the purpose is just to live, why follow just the capital? It gives you the liberty to do things and buy materialistic things, but it doesn't satisfy the soul. And this is where I spent 15 days with my grandfather, who was mourning his wife. And in the process of grief, we found solace. We had a few drinks. We connected the way we never did. And this is where I learned about the stories that we have been hearing growing up, but never paid attention to. That alcohol is actually runs in our blood. My great grandfather migrated from northwest to northeast, and that's where he meets a Scottish officer during his time with the British Army. And that Scotsman taught him how to distill, and this is how we found our way to Scotland. And immediately I have this realization that I need to do something in alcohol. And after the whole process, I come back to Scotland wanting to do whiskey because that's what we commonly consume in the house. But whiskey humbles you. Whiskey humbled me that it needs millions and millions of pounds, which I never had, to do whiskey. So gin became my default. It's easy to make, quick turnaround. And it's fast, but it went through a whole process because I had a full-time job and I had to find something that has meaning. So, but I was very much clear from day one that it had to be something that connects to my story and my narrative, which is where I belong from, where my family belongs from, and playing around with 200 variants of tea is how I started. So it wasn't that easy. It took me a long time to create. And went through an explosion of experience with the flavors. And then finally, when I landed up on this recipe, which Matt, who is the master distiller who produces our gin, helped me create through his knowledge and what I wanted. And then we finally found a spirit that I could resonate with, and we landed up on the gin.
So the experimentation, Nish, is
Yes.
this going on in a garage or something like that in your house in a small still or?
It did, yes. It started at partnering with a university that teaches distillation, and because I don't belong to the spirits industry individually as I was an ex-banker, I had to learn the trade, the formulations, the science behind it. So I would attend their sessions to understand how this is all created, and they helped me create a base spirit. What is that my base juniper-led spirit looks like? And then Matt helped me create the layering. So I went through the whole process.
Yeah, there's a point here. You've got a full-time job. You're experimenting on this on the side. Tell me about that kind of transition where you find that you've got to move from full-time job to new company. That's you've got to give up that steady,
Stability,
solid
yeah.
income and take the chance. Tell me about that.
It happened by force rather than through a requirement or the company was growing. My company is built on failure. I created a gin which looked pretty and was consumable. And when I went to market with the product, nobody accepted it. It failed. It was too niche, too new, too experimental, and it was outright reject. So I almost went bankrupt with it. So yes, I was doing a job on the side, which was paying the bills. And then this side hustle, which I was trying to scale, which was failing again and again and again. But I think I was really enjoying the process. I almost, failure didn't bother me. I would go back to my small home office, a very small room in our humble home, and with the garage being my stock holding place, with my partner complaining about no space to walk. And it led to slowly growing and building momentum. And when came the point that, okay, I cannot run two parallel lives side by side, I had to choose the way forward. And the way forward was to hand in my notice, give up the consistent stable life and jump into the oblivion, which was unknown.
I'm interested in how did you get people to accept this new form of gin? What was it? What was your marketing strategy? What was your
You know
adoption? How did they adopt you? What was it about what you were doing that made them say, "Yeah, that's for me. I'll have a go at that"?
We almost, there wasn't a marketing strategy, there wasn't a marketing budget, there wasn't a marketing person. It was just me and the product. I would go to every single gin festivals. I would go to every single market, the farmers market where you can sell gin. What I realized very soon was people were accepting the product. So end consumer mattered. So I would go to these events and I would make a sale that will pay the bills. And I would do that, I hustled very hard to a point that I almost died. But I had this reassurance that people were liking what I was doing and people were accepting and they were coming back. So when I went to the retail outlets and I said, listen, my gin is selling. This is why I'm surviving. You guys are not accepting it. Give me a shot. So somebody would say, okay, leave me five cases and if I sell, I'll pay you. And that started selling and that created enough momentum for me to keep going. And then slowly we started as one man bandwagon to Selena joining the team. And then Selena built a team around her. And as the demand grew, we started exporting. Now we export to 14 airports in India. We export pan GCC. We export to 690 outlets in Canada. We export to Europe. We are in pan UK. Slowly, everybody who said no started to see those traction and they came back.
So you did have a marketing strategy, and it was very much about sampling. So you went to markets and I think it's a really smart thing to do anyway, because you get that direct to consumer experience. They're getting a free nip, and so, oh, hold on a minute, I like this. I'll take a bottle. And like
Correct.
you say, you're hustling. You're saying, yeah, take two or take whatever you were saying at the time worked.
Correct. I stayed true to my story. I was very passionate about narrating why I'm doing this because, like yourself, they were very intrigued to know that why would somebody leave a well-paying financial sector job and jumping into something that would make him stand in the cold and the rain and sell a bottle every hour and then make some revenue. And the story was compelling enough because I believed in that story because that was my honest, genuine story and why I did. And I keep repeating myself on every single platform is because that's what led me to where I am today.
But Kevin asked you that question about sort of jumping from corporate into your passion play. And I think if Kevin ever writes a book, it's going to be about that. I mean, we could probably do that ourselves just by nip by slicing up some of the videos that we've got over 10 years or so, because it repeats. It's a repeatable pattern.
Correct.
And
Yeah,
in
I just
your,
find that fascinating, Graham.
I don't.
No.
No. You're right, Kevin. And so, actually, so do I. Because actually, Nish, I'm not 100% sure you were ever really into your corporate career. But it was
No.
almost like a necessity. But
No.
there was something about maybe a link to your cultural locations, and then the story about the stills, the Scottish army guy or whatever, and then effectively you kind of merged all these things, and that became, oh, crack it. It was a moment, and I love those stories because, let's face it, who wants to get up every day and say, oh, I just can't wait to make another money, another pound for a corporate, entity. They don't really care for me. And
Just a
it's,
number on the Excel sheet.
yeah, precisely. And I'm being perhaps a little bit unfair to corporates because I think a lot of good companies are out there. But
They are.
truthfully, they're not your company. This is.
Correct. It has meaning. So I have all the respect in the world for the people who are in corporate and the companies. They employ people like myself to build a life, because if that didn't exist, this would have not existed, because that almost funded it to an extent that this exists. But for me, on an individual level, I just didn't belong. I was wearing the best suits I can. I was driving the best car I can. I was splurging on a life that I never had, because I started my life as a waiter. And I think comes a point, once you have indulged into a certain level of luxury, when you don't come from luxury or money, you realize what's next. And for me, I couldn't see myself going anywhere. I didn't feel connected to the concept of just another car. I have an SUV. Let's get a bigger SUV. I stopped that, and I drive a van today. I don't care, because I love it, because I know I'm going to my workplace, and every day I tell this, and I think Selena is bored listening to this. Where did the time go?
And I think there's a lot of people though, Nish, whether they've come from nothing or they've started with something, they get onto that corporate track, and it is the bigger car, it's the bigger house, and the commitments come along that go with the salary, which mean, and there's that level of dissatisfaction always there. And the more you go into that corporate career, you've got golden handcuffs, and it is so difficult to get out. And that's part of what fascinates me about this whole process. How do you actually make that jump and
Corporates can give
survive
you,
into
they
that
can,
passion play?
but they can give you lots of really valuable experience. And
Yes.
we've all been there.
Yeah.
And there were moments when we were working for others that they were just golden. There were wonderful experiences. But at some point, you have to pivot to what's important to you because you only get one go at this.
Exactly. And I think that realization comes to most of us in life. Some choose to pick it and some choose not to. So it's stability over passion. I think it's an experience you need to live. And it's about one of those things. If you've not been to a country, you're always willing to go, but something stopped you from going, the risk of being in that country. But then you go and you fall in love with it. Same thing happened to me. I had never been on an international flight before coming to Scotland. And when I came, day one, it was cold, it was dark, it was brutal. The fish and chips, the fish was nice, but the mushy peas, I had never had mushy peas in my life. It was so alien to me, I almost barfed. But you fall in love with something in that whole environment, and it becomes part of your journey.
It could be worse. You could have gone to Glasgow and then
I was in Glasgow.
Fried Mars bars. I mean, that'd be a bit better for you.
I landed in Glasgow. I came to Scotland and lived first 4 years of my life in Glasgow. So my journey started
No,
from
that's okay.
the West End.
Oh well, very close. My mother was from a place called Rook Hill back in the day, but that was in the 30s when it was an okay place. It's not so much like that anymore. But
I
basically,
used to work in a restaurant that sits in the West End, if you've heard of Ashoka's.
not directly, but I sold cigarettes there for a company called British American Tobacco when I was in my 20s, and just wonderful people. I just I'm a half Scot myself, but I love the people. They're the salt of the earth, apart from a few politicians that I hate, but that's another story. But we all have those. But the one thing that I'm interested in, and I see it with my colleague Faisers, is the work ethic for Indians as a whole. Is it because you is it a family thing?
No.
Or an obligation thing, or is it, I don't know what it is, but it just seems.
Trauma. Trauma. So the trauma of living in the unknown. Most people, the most of us in India, come from almost nothing in life. Even if you are from a comfortable family, still the drastic contrast of life that the Western world would never see. On a daily basis, India humbles you in a good way, because you can be driving around the road and you will see kids on the floor sleeping on the streets. and a mass state, what teaches you is that can be us. That drives you to an extent. You know, in the UK, we are blessed to have the worst of governments, but we know we might not end up on the street. There is a possibility, unless we choose to go down the route of drugs and we end up on the street. That's a different story altogether. But the highly likely that we might not end up on the street, and there is a possibility a car can run over you, which is again a very unlikely scenario in the world we live in. When you come from a contrast of life, which is so extreme, you are almost, you have a sense of failure is not an option.
That drive that you have, and if you characterize that thing as trauma and just looking around you, and I was privileged to go to India, was it last year, year before, and I saw some of the contrast. I saw parts of Mumbai that were unbelievable, and I saw the smog in Delhi, and I saw the beauty of Jaipur. And we almost got to your area by went to Shimla, which was just beautiful. Like just that, except the guy that drove us there and driving back. I nearly wasn't. Kevin would have been doing this on his own. Anyway, that's another story. But it was and is a beautiful country, but it also has so many problems to resolve. So many.
We all have problems, but I think, look at the mass. We live in a population that the whole country that we live in is the size of one state in India. So when you're operating on a level of the world's biggest population with so many people walking on the streets, the efficiency goes out of the window. We have so many problems here, but we are not at the scale where they are at. And then you have, the problems with the government, the corruption. So everything adds to the problems. But then there are people who are, leading the world. Most world CEOs are from India. So the India has the capacity, but on the underlying problem is, the support system doesn't exist to that extent that people need. Even if that support system is created, scalability is a problem. India is the only country in the world after China where becoming a billionaire is the fastest thing you can do. Because if you create a candy for £1, and if it works, it has almost 1.5 billion people, you can be a billionaire in 1 year. Most of us takes a lifetime to be a billionaire in the Western world. So again, it comes back to the contrast piece, the pros and cons, but yeah, it feeds into how we operate in life. And that contrast drives people like myself and other entrepreneurs who come from that part of the world.
You are Kevin, you might forgive me for this, but I ran Rutland Square through a new app on MechLabs AI, which is a marketing, it's a kind of marketing platform. And one of my colleagues built a new app. He's just brilliant. He's unbelievably brilliant. He's never off. He gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning. He works. Oh, he's just an amazing fella. Anyway, the thing is, he built this new app, and I ran your company through it. And it's quite in your face. It gives you quite in your face ideas. And I wonder if you've ever thought about this, because the one thing that you're doing is, and the first part of this is that it says that you're almost everything to everyone. Because he says you've got drink less, drink more, drink less, drink better, Scottish distillation, Himalayan water, Assam mist, oolong tea, empowering women, sustainability. There's a lot there. Have you ever considered that there needs to be a little bit more sharpness to Rutland Water, to Rutland, sorry, Rutland Square?
There's a reason behind it. We want to be as raw as possible, right? I have seen companies, they are doing great, but there is almost a sense of artificial inflation in what they do. And we purposely choose that. My competitors, my colleagues, my friends who run better gin companies than I do, they have everything so aesthetic and beautiful. I feel it's an effort they have put in to create something that is not real. The reality of life is chaos and chaotic, where we want to preach everything because we are not targeting you with information. We are blasting you with what we want, what we do as a company, and you connect where you want to connect with, because that is us as a company. We stand for certain values, that's up there. We stand for our botanicals, that's up there. We want you to drink less, but we want you to drink better, because that's our underlying philosophy. I would rather create two SKUs, which is a gin and a rum, and I would not have 16 gins on my website. There is a partner non-alcoholic beverage on my website because I want you to drink better, because I learned about the company through my travels, and I found that the company is driven by somebody who is diabetic, who wants to consume something that doesn't exist. So he created a company. We partnered with him. He said, why don't we drink better through our website? If you buy our gin, buy the mixtures, that we don't create them, but the guy who does has a great story. Go connect to his story.
I look, I'll share this with you a bit later, because I'm sure you'll find it at least interesting. And it's suggesting a maybe some different ways of positioning you against someone else, or something else. And I think that's really helpful when it comes to marketing. I come from the Dan Kennedy school, so basically there's always got to be an enemy. But you know what can.
We are pro learning. We would love and l learn and love to learn what you have to say so we can pick up the bits that can help us.
I don't want this podcast to be dominated by that, but I just found it incredibly interesting, especially for you. And I've had a look at the site, and anybody who hasn't picked up on this already, that where you should go and spend your money is rutlandsquare.com.
Correct.
Now, on there, I'm sure you've got all kinds of offers and so forth, but basically, you can actually shop the spirits and their mixers. There's so much to get. There's some wonderful photography there,
Thank you.
but I think there's a lot more that maybe you might want to consider. So
Absolutely.
from a marketing point of view, but
Yeah.
I do really like what where you're going with this, and I think you do. I mean, let's face it, you've got 1.5 or thereabouts billion people in India,
Yeah.
but only about 5 million people in Scotland. So I mean, but then again, the relevance of this is right around the world.
Correct. And we don't want to shove our product on people's face to say go drink because we are better. We do what we know best. You can make your pick, but we know what we do, and we are very transparent about what we do. If you like our story and narrative, great, be part of it. Come join the club, because what we are sharing through the bottles are a small view into our lives. The people of Rutland, which is the people, they make the website, they work behind the scenes. I deliberately chose Oolong White Tea because it's such a global tea. Oolong doesn't belong to India. Oolong was introduced to India during the Opium War, and it has its own character. When you pick Oolong from India, you pick Oolong from China, where it originates from. So it's almost about a defining character, which is again very, very different to what you would pick on the bottles on the shelf.
You've now got a bridge to China as well
Correct.
through Oolong, and I would imagine the Chinese would like that. I mean, they're quite
They
heavy into their
were.
spirits, of course.
They drink a lot. I've been to China a few times. I love the country to an extent. I would love to get my products in China soon. And yeah, I hope they do, because they drink a little extreme there, but the market is evolving. And why we are banking and investing in markets like India, GCC, and China are because there is a room to learn, where us and Britain and US, we are spoiled for choices, and we are evolved in options available to us, where these markets are upcoming, people are hungry, they want to consume better because their income is increasing, the country's GDP is growing, and they want to indulge, where we have become more preservers. We want to preserve our wealth, we want to preserve our house, our lifestyle. So
Well, it's like Kevin. I mean, he's preserving what he's got, aren't you, Kevin?
oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think you're pickling myself for posterity, Ray.
You have at least one buyer, but no, I genuinely think that you're onto something here. I mean, I
Thank
think it's this fusion idea. My 60th birthday, one of my friends came along with a some gin and lots of mixers and so forth, and they're not in your league. But the point is that they created different versions of gin, and of course, one of my daughter-in-laws, she oh, I can't possibly drink this. And by the end of the evening, she was hooked. It is a lovely, lovely drink.
Thank you.
And I like the way in which you're presenting at least one of the pictures I can see on the site. It does look like a cocktail.
It is. So again, we don't want to limit our gins to just sipping because everybody has a very individual choice. And we want to push the boundaries by showing them our gin is just not limited to sipping. You can mix it with your tonic. I love my gin with a ginger ale. I love to sip, but now and then, if I want to have a few many drinks, then I would mix it with ginger ale, so it brings the ABV down even further. I love cocktails. I'm a big old-fashioned guy, and if I'm in bars and if I'm in good bar, I like a whiskey old-fashioned rather than a bourbon old-fashioned. You can make a beautiful old-fashioned with our gin. You can make a nice gin punch. When I used to do markets, I used to do gin hot toddy, which used to be another phenomenal drink. That again, I'm not trying to sell my gin here. What I'm trying to say is what we created, thinking we were creating strategically, actually got created out of accident. And it's so diverse, it touches everybody in their own court, and it just expands that whole horizon.
You would expect your hot toddy to outperform a whiskey or hot toddy. I'd love to have a hot toddy war, gin versus whiskey, and to see who recovers from a cold first.
Whiskey would be more warmer, more complex, more deep. Gin will be more, of course, the warmth will come from the hot toddy, but because we have cardamom, cinnamon, star anise, so you don't have to add them in. You just need hot water, gin, and a dash of honey. That should do the job. So you don't need to add a cinnamon or some cardamoms into your glass.
I'm going to say that might be a, that might, whenever I do get my next call, which mercifully, touch wood, it's been
If you
quite a
just see
while.
Nish on a stall at the Edinburgh Christmas market, whiskey hot toddy, gin hot toddy,
Have you been to? We
really
went to the
practical
Edinburgh
comparison.
Christmas market. It was so busy.
It is.
We this last year we went there, and it was just you couldn't breathe. It was so busy.
Yep, we did exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Did
Oh,
come
wow.
back with a bottle of craft gin from one of the stalls.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you are. Well, there was plenty of people selling that, but
That's what we do.
you, I mean, Nish, when you cast your net forward, in the next few years, what do you want to be able to with Rutland Square? Where is it going?
We don't know where it's going because we don't think in that direction. We take the day as it comes, because we very much still operate as a startup business. We have a vision that we want to mitigate the struggles that I have had starting a business. So if we are lucky enough to take it through the bridges and see the light of some resource by selling the product, I would like to empower people who are entrepreneurial but don't have the resource or the infrastructure to do it. And money solves all problem, and I would like to utilize the money that I will make on this planet and I'll leave on this planet behind is to help people to form a community that, at the end of the day, we are a pack animals. We have our family and friends, and we have our highs and lows, but I would like to increase my pack. And I can only do it by bringing more people onto the journey, not only the Rutland Square journey, but the journey that sits in the future, which I don't know where it takes us. Maybe we are surviving today, we might not. But hey, this is part of life. Ups and downs are part of it. But my goal is to bring as many people together so we can create one big table, we can laugh, we can cry, we can fight, and we can say, oh, hell of a ride before we retire.
And so I've got to know this. So you're in Edinburgh, and I know that you probably love cricket because when you were a kid, you'd have been playing cricket. But in Edinburgh, if you exclude the rugby, which you might be a fan of, but which is your football team?
I actually don't have a football team or a cricket team. I support Scotland now and then in cricket where I can. I don't follow cricket because I'm so consumed with work and the passion I have. I love it so much. I just don't get the time. I do enjoy Formula One for the thrill of it, the sound it makes, because I am a petrol head. I don't have the money, otherwise I would be driving around in a nice 812 GTS Ferrari. hopefully one day, because I love the thrill that you get, the adrenaline you get from the noise it makes. I'm rather a quiet person. I'm not a I used to be a very extreme person, but life has humbled me and slowed me down. But yes, I support the winning team. So at the moment, if there is a, I have a family who extremes of Celtic and Rangers and Hibs fans. So whoever is winning, I'd chip in because
Like
I let them
Kevin,
fight.
it's a bit like Kevin and his Newcastle. He only started to support them when they got all this money.
I only started to support them when they walked through Newcastle Airport in 1969 with a big shiny trophy. And I said to my
Nice.
grandpa, "Do we win these all the time?" And he said, "Yes." How did he lie?
Well, we were champions that year, actually. That's at least. Anyway, by and by. So going back to Rotten Square, big opportunity for you to actually help more people. And at the moment, I believe you're partnering with Donate a Meal Foundation. So it, just building on what you've just said, Nish, that this is another way of actually sharing the upside of doing what you're doing.
Correct. We try because we are a young company. We do the donations every time or every quarter. If we have a nice, exciting quarter, we try to chip in whatever we can to the best of our ability. Because I think opportunities is something that doesn't come to everyone unless you create one. So by partnering with Donate a Meal, we at least give kids around the world an opportunity to at least have a meal which they deserve. And Christmas, these guys are doing an amazing job in India. They give gifts to Christmas. So they create a wish list of what do you desire to do? Somebody said, "I would like to be on a plane." So they raise capital to give people an experience that they can never imagine.
That is an amazing point in which we'll draw this brilliant podcast to a close, Nish. Thank you for joining us on the next 100 Days podcast.
So, Graham, what a story. Quite a journey for Nish from India, from multiple parts of India to Scotland, career change, corporate escape, and then bringing the story together into a spirit.
You can almost taste it. It's probably worth spending whatever it is, 30 quid, to get one of these bottles, just to get that taste. I certainly know who I could re-gift it to. As my friend who's passionate about gin, and but the thing about this is that it's almost like it's that the distillation and the gin and all that came second, and the culture came first. And that fusion that he's brought to the world comes from a really authentic place, I think. I saw an overused word, but basically, it's from him. It's from his ex, you know, his lived experience on in different parts of India, but also Scotland. And so, yeah, I mean, it's
Question I never
fascinating.
quite got to ask Nish in there. Very much his lived experience has gone into the product. A lot of time was invested in getting the right product and experimentation and very much being hands-on. Now that you get to that stage that the product is starting to take off and it becomes about sales and marketing, I just wonder how. I don't think Nish is quite there yet, but my question would be, how does he keep that passion as it becomes a bigger brand?
I think there are ways, but I think he has to sort of carve himself a little bit away from the middle, because in the middle you've got lots of people doing similar things, and you've got people eating your lunch, and he doesn't need that. He's got something quite unique, and he needs to be able to demonstrate that in the market. But the work that I talked to him about, and I'm not certainly not going to share it in this in the show notes, but that type of thinking might help him, and you might, if over the next few months, you might see him adapt some of it. Maybe not, maybe so. But I do think the day if you think about a triangle and you're in the middle of it and you're not at one of the pointy ends, you're not that distinct. And I think that is the danger that that Nish might have for a wonderful brand of drinks, and I think he needs to be somewhere closer to the pointy bits and not in the middle. The middle suggests, oh, there's lots of people there. No, it doesn't quite work that way. What it means is there's lots of competitors there.
And I just hope he's successful because I've seen so many what look like great brands of gin come and go. I bought many a bottle of craft gin that I've never seen again. There's one in particular that's similar in a way to what Nish is doing. I bought a bottle of gin once that was blended with Earl Grey tea. Very much a local thing here in Northumberland because Earl Grey is from this area. His house, Howick Hall, had a water supply that was such that he basically invented Earl Grey tea to taste right with the water that was on the site. So loads of Indian links in there and so on. But no, I bought that bottle of gin. Never ever seen it to buy again.
As I've said, I think Nish will be paying more attention to the way in which his company grows. I don't think he can leave that to chance and to the sales ledger, because I
No.
think the sales ledger is where he's at now, but there's a greater scaling opportunity that he has.
And the thing that I like is that he's already started on that path, that he's moved the step away from the one man on the farmer's market or whatever, which I think is a great idea for this. I've bought so many bottles of beer or bottles of gin from that sort of venue. But as I say, many of those I've seen once and never again, but Nish has moved into the bigger stuff where he's selling product now in greater bulk, which
Well,
has to be a good sign.
it might be just me, but I reckon you need one of his hot toddies.
I think I do at the moment, Graham. I've got a stinking cold. Need something to shift it.
On that note, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.